Ah!
Truth is, nobody knows what it looks like in there.
I don't see any shields.
That's because no one would be stupid enough to attack them.
We could take those speeders, go in at night. You have some T-47s in the hangar.
It's suicide.
Well, we need to find a way inside.
Oh, well, we're not soldiers. Those speeders are for hauling sewage.
She's 10 years old. I won't leave her there. I'll go on my own.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
I'm Richard.
And I'm Jonathan.
And this is Star Wars TV Cast.
This week, we're covering Obi-Wan Kenobi Part 4.
How Obi-Wan got his groove back.
Well, almost.
I'd say he's trying to be a hero.
He's getting there.
Trying.
All right, Star Wars question of the week is, besides Luke Skywalker... Because I think we would all pick him if we included him. Who's your favorite Jedi and why?
I'm going to have to go with Obi-Wan. Seriously. I mean, you know, kind of boring since we're doing a podcast on Obi-Wan, but he really was. I remember as a kid watching the original trilogy in the movie theater and listening to Kenobi's, you know, backstory and then watching the duel with Vader and thinking, God, what's this guy's backstory? Wouldn't you like to know? And now, you know, 40 years later, we have a pretty comprehensive, like, you know, journal of his adventures, which I'm pleased with. I'm happy we got what we got from him and continuing to do so. Mm-hmm. So I'd say he's one of my favorites.
I mean, he's a favorite of mine, too. And I actually think this show is making him more interesting to me because... He's had a setback and as much as we, you know, are like, oh, it's kind of a bummer to see him sort of moping around a little bit. It makes him more interesting to me, more human and Ewan McGregor's just killing it. So anyway,
for sure.
Yeah. I think he's a great Jedi. What about you, Jonathan?
Funnily enough, mine is Obi-Wan as well, of course. I always thought of him as a gentleman, unflappable, always in control and wise and humble. And I remember referring to himself as a Jedi Knight, which has a different weight to it, you know, being a knight and someone who always did the right thing despite the personal risk. And as a kid, the idea of an old man recognizing that there was something special about Luke or me and and then inviting you on a space adventure was highly intoxicating. And then to see him as a young man, he was dashing and heroic. And, when faced with a company of droids and General Grievous, he would, without hesitation, just jump down, say hello there, and take them all on at once. And I thought that was one of my favorite and most inspirational moments of all of Star Wars.
I hope not too many old men invited you on adventures.
No space adventures.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the Jedi Knight, and the knight is sort of the English, just noble, you know, and he was very proper, and I mean, he's an English guy, right?
Yeah.
Alec Guinness.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Sir Alec Guinness.
Yes, Sir Alec Guinness.
So he is an actual knight now.
Mine is, it was hard. I almost picked Obi-Wan too. I think probably Yoda. I like his zenness and his playfulness and the way he talks and, you know, that he's, I feel like he really taught Luke most everything he knows. And so I like that. I don't like how he flopped around like Daffy Duck in Attack of the Clones. I always wanted to see him fight with using as little motion as needed, you know, not like, whoop, 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 whoop.
Right.
Another favorite. Well, my favorite Jedi name is Kit Fisto. I just like that name.
Kit Fisto.
He's the green guy with red eyes and kind of like the slick back tentacles. And
super
badass.
That sounds
in
like
the Clone Wars.
IP Freely or something like that.
Yeah,
a lot of vagina.
And the hottest Jedi, which I've included in our notes, is Isla Secura. She's this blue Twi'lek who fought during the Clone Wars. Meow.
A friend of mine, because it was filmed, the prequels were all filmed in Sydney. So a friend of mine called Tux was one of the was actually a Jedi, and he played a Jedi in the scene where Mace Windu comes to arrest the Emperor, and then he's one of the guys that just gets cut down immediately.
Oh, wow, cool.
Yeah. I think Kit Fisto was there too.
Yeah,
in that scene.
Yeah, I'm not sure what his Jedi name is, but he has an action figure and everything.
You said his name is Tux? That almost sounds
his
like
name
a
is Tux.
Jedi name.
Yeah, yeah. I can never pronounce his last name.
Sounds like a Jedi. That's super cool. We asked you guys to, and you guys wrote in with some of yours, so let's read through those. Rich?
Paik Allen says, I'm going to butcher this. Ki Adi Mundi?
That's right.
Ki Adi Mundi. I mean, look at this dude. He's got like a cone head.
Kind of looks like
that's a high head.
Penis head.
Thank you. I'm glad you said that. Okay, Damien Vitale. I'm going with Master Yoda. He's the ultimate proof you can't judge what someone is capable of by their appearance. Good things come in small packages, and in my mind, he's Grogu's baby daddy. Squinty face.
Tony. Wendy Epper says Leia because she put the cause above all else, sacrificed everything, never gave up. And I saw she had written that, and I first thought, was Leia a Jedi? So I looked, and yeah, I think she was considered a Jedi, even though she only trained for a relatively short time with Luke. Wikipedia says 1 year. And it's so true. Like, everybody kind of gave up. Luke gave up. Ben Yoda gave up or died, you know. And Leia, or even Han Solo, he went back to smuggling, I think. But Leia just stuck with the cause. I mean, she gave up being a Jedi, but she stuck with the cause for her whole life. That's pretty cool.
Nate Pacini says, it's got to be Mace. He's a bad motherfucker.
Another Jedi name, G.J. Pathia. Yoda, if I'm going to be truly honest, I wish I was Yoda. He always had his shit together. Squinty face again?
Yeah. Well, after 900 years, you too.
Megan.
Okay, we've got impressions. We're doing impressions.
Megan Dively Lehman says Rey because she's fearless, relentless, loyal, and a great role model for girls. Can't argue with that.
Dave Plunninger. Anyone else rock a purple lightsaber? Mace, baby.
And Alex Baelish, Ahsoka Tano. I think her story arc has been so amazing and heartbreaking to watch. She's been a learner, leader, and underestimated throughout her life. She's a bridge that brings the Clone Wars, Rebels, and Skywalker saga together. From Anakin's Padawan to Ezra's friend and confidant and now Luke's advisor, she knows the old ways and new, plus looking to learn more. She is the best of the Jedi ever, is or was. She may not be as wise as Master Yoda or strong as Anakin. Her loyalty in doing the right thing always outweighs it all. Plus, in her own words, I am no Jedi, and that's why she's the best. Now that I have a daughter, I can't think of a better role model than her. She's one of my favorites.
That's great, Alex. Yeah, you're convincing me. That's so true, everything you said. And Steve Brown said, Ivana Taco is mine as well, which is what he called Ahsoka Tano before.
Ivana Taco.
All right, let's get into this week's episode, Obi-Wan Kenobi Part 4. What do you think, Rich?
The first half was definitely a slow burn with Kenobi trolling around that Empire base. You know, plus we already kind of seen that a couple of times in Star Wars shows and movies. And then about 20 minutes in, I was kind of like, is this going to be the entire episode? But then we got what we all wanted, I'm assuming. I know I certainly wanted in the second half to see Kenobi bust out the lightsaber and start hacking. And it would seem he's starting to get it. It's starting to come back. You know, it's like riding a bike, I guess. You don't really forget. You just need a little motivation, huh?
How about you, Jonathan?
This was not my favorite episode. And with only two episodes to go, I'm not sure I love where the series is going. But we do have two episodes to go, and I still have hope.
Yeah.
And rebellions are built on hope, as they say. So
yeah.
I look forward to the next two. And
I on first watch, I thought, I really was like, okay. I mean, we've, like you said, Rich, we've seen this. It feels like a less good version of things we've seen many times before in Star Wars at this point. But it's still good, even with that. Yeah. It's still cool. I mean, it's a beautiful, the base is fun to look at, and it's still fun to watch. But it's like the stakes are kind of lower than in the Death Star. You know, it's like the Death Star, which is kind of interesting because this is part four, and maybe it's a deliberate echo of, you know, episode four. But I really did love to see Obi-Wan. I think he totally turned the corner. Like, he wasn't even gonna go try to find Leia, and now he's the one pushing to go get her, and he's busting in and taking action, you know. So he's really back to being a hero now.
He's on the road to recovery, I hope.
Well, he I mean, what more do you want? You bust into a base, bust out your lightsaber, start chopping up stormtroopers.
Well, for me, I find that he was willing to do it and had to do it, but he didn't relish in the mission. It wasn't, I'm still wanting that, you know, the Obi-Wan fire, and nothing is too much for him. But this seemed like a massive hill for him to climb to get back onto the horse, and he had to do it, but it wasn't something he did with his previous with
gusto. I would not be surprised if we never get that back. It's the cockiness of youth, and then when you get smacked down a couple of times, you might not, you know. We'll see, but
it's kind of like real life, you know.
Like, I mean,
especially the last 2 years.
One thing we haven't mentioned about the show is the theme of trust, where last episode, or maybe it was the one before, Obi-Wan kind of yelled at Leia, like, not everyone's good. You can, you know, this person isn't even going to show up. And then they left, and the person showed up, and he wasn't there. And so I think after you trust someone like Palpatine, put all your faith into him, and it turns out you got betrayed, then it's hard to just be that free with yourself anymore.
Although I thought that you know, that remark with its viciousness, well, not viciousness, but he was a little bit angry with her. Thought that was a bit out of character and came a little out of nowhere. I understand it, but I think I'm not sure he would have reacted that harshly, but with the same sentiment, but a little less harsh.
I mean, that's kind of why it stood out to me. It felt like he was triggered lashing out, you know.
You could see the anxiety coming out.
He's still, for me, he's still a Jedi, and so that's sort of, you know, it's denying emotion and not being emotional. And so I found it still a little bit out of character, but perhaps, you know, this is now his character.
Yeah, and I mean, as we talked about last week, by the time of Star Wars, 9 years from now in the timeline, he's not like that at all. He's so calm and centered. I think this show might be the story of how he's, you know, getting back to that place of the centered Jedi.
Right.
But we'll see.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into our points, Rich.
So, I don't know. I only got to watch the show once, this episode one time. And so I'm a little, what made the biggest impression on me, and I'm not sure if I missed something here, but when Obi-Wan was trolling through the corridors and he came upon those Jedi that were like preserved in tanks along the walls, I was like, whoa, what the heck was that all about? I was like, that's like a major plot or something, you know, story point, and maybe for future episodes or another show. I don't know. I don't know anything about that. Are those Jedi dead? I mean, did we recognize any of them?
Yes. This is the Inquisitor's base, right? And they're tasked with hunting the Jedi. And in the sort of meeting room of the Inquisitors, there's lightsabers all around of the fallen Jedi. So these are the Jedis they've successfully hunted and killed.
Mm. Okay, so they are dead?
Yeah.
Not just like in stasis or something.
I mean,
well, it referred to it as a tomb, so I assume that they are dead.
Tomb. Because the first thing I thought of when I saw that was Snoke. Because I remember there was some, when we talked about the movie, you know, there was something like they pieced him together, or they found a way to turn him into.
I think it was revealed in Rise of Skywalker, and I try not to think about that movie too much, but that he was actually a clone. And there's been little bits of I think the writers are trying to make it make sense why Palpatine just suddenly appeared, you know, and because in Rise of Skywalker, what's his name? Poe Dameron was just like, and somehow Palpatine's back, and that's all they did to explain it.
Yeah.
But, but you know, even the stuff in Mandalorian where they're grabbing, Grogu, presumably he has a high midi-chlorian count and they want his blood, and this stuff with kind of preserving the Jedi, and there's just stuff all around Star Wars where maybe the idea is this is the Emperor trying to pave the way to have cloning work so that he could come back if he ever dies. Maybe that's just speculation, but I don't know.
That's a good idea though, having an entire clone army that can use the Force.
It could also just be like a sick sort of trophy haul.
An intimidation.
Right, yeah. That wasn't lost on me
strategy.
Either.
Yeah, because that's where they take Jedis to either turn or dispose of them. And so they might take, you know, the Jedis take a walk down this corridor and say, do you want to end up here or not?
Anyways, I thought it was horrible for Obi-Wan Kenobi to see that right before he goes in. It's like, oh, there comes the anxiety, depression, and everything else that reminds them of how they failed right there in front of them.
That was a great moment in the episode. Like, that made me boosted it up a notch for me. Like, holy shit, it's a tomb.
Yeah, agreed.
They really are an evil empire.
Jonathan?
Yeah, I'd like to talk about the overall look and feel of the series so far. And I can't fault the look and feel of the series. There's no leather jackets or colored Vespers or looks to cameras like we had in Boba Fett. And the color tone, the uniform and the casting is all on point. And I'm glad to see the Empire look so cool and intimidating. The architecture of the Fortress Imperius, which is the best name ever, is amazing. And when they came, the entrance of the fortress, when they came in, they had that, not the Imperial March, but the Obi-Wan version of it, and which I thought was fantastic. And the hallways are so Star Wars. I never thought I'd love see a hallway. But when I see that hallway, I'm just like, I know where I am. Mm-hmm. I know what I'm watching. And seeing the stormtroopers use the E-11s as well, the stormtrooper blasters, was great to see them back in full force. And what else? The extravagant torture room that they had. They had a giant stadium-sized torture room. And again, going back to last week, if you have a very large room dedicated to torture, you, my friend, are the bad guys.
Right.
So I love that they haven't deviated from the classic Star Wars feel.
Yeah, all of that stuff you just mentioned totally reminded me of the first movie, the original, A New Hope. Yeah, and even with the little robots that went around the corners on the floor, going really fast.
Yeah, the little mouse robots. Yeah.
Bank
with the bam, bam. Those ones. Yeah, man. Have you been to Star Wars Galaxy's Edge at Disneyland, Jonathan?
No, I'm dying to go.
You're going to love it. And if you get to go on the Rise of the Resistance ride, you're in that. I mean, it's the First Order, but basically it's in the Empire, you know? It's so cool. It just made me feel like I was 8 years old.
I might have to give you a call next time I'm in town because I don't think a man of my age wandering around Disneyland on his own is a good look.
I'll bring one of my kids along for cover.
Yeah, right. Dad, again?
You love
Shut
us.
Up. Shut up, kid.
Yeah.
We're going. I want another picture in front of the Millennium Falcon.
All right. Now, number one is Obi-Wan changes his attitude and I mentioned it, but he decides to take action and get involved in the big way, even to the point where everyone else is unsure or refuses. And he's like, I'll go by myself then. And, it took Leia to bring him out. You know, he fell for her kind of. We start off with him in his back to tank, which I don't think we've ever seen Obi-Wan in a back to tank before.
No.
Recovering from that spanking he got from Vader last week. What'd you think of last week's, Rich?
Last week's was Darth Vader. Yeah, he got dragged in the fire by Darth Vader.
Yeah.
That was cool. Again, a really solid ending to the episode. Although I was a little confused at why he just kind of let him go.
Yeah,
we were talking about that. Was an impenetrable wall of fire.
Yeah, I guess maybe he just doesn't like fire, right? He's just like, fire bad.
He kind of looked like he was spacing out.
The planet of lava.
Like you see fire and he's just like daydreaming all of a sudden.
Yeah, staring into an open fire.
Yeah, that was a pretty good. And I like the idea of the whole underground, railroad, so to speak.
Yeah.
That was happening there, which, you know, had a big part in this episode too.
Right. So, Obi-Wan's in the back to tank, and I think with the good guys, the back to tank has been a symbol of course, when a character's gone through a huge trauma and needs to recuperate, but also then they end up reborning into something greater after, like, with Luke in Empire Strikes Back after his fight with Vader too, when he lost his hand and then he came back as a Jedi in Return of the Jedi, and then Boba Fett recovering from the incident with Luke where he accidentally hit his jetpack and went falling into the Sarlacc pit.
Right.
And we see that Obi-Wan was burned. We weren't sure, but the whole side of his body's burned.
His whole arm was messed up.
Yeah. All down his side. And then they showed Vader superimposed with Vader in his tank to much worse wounds inflicted by Obi-Wan years earlier. And made me wonder if the Bacta can heal like light to medium burns, but not so, like Vader's not getting healed. He spends a lot of time in there.
Light to medium burns.
But Vader, I feel like it's less about being reborn into something greater and more just like a symbol of how far gone he is. Like he needs regular Bacta baths just to stay alive, maybe. Right. Anyway, so Obi-Wan is trying to get this guy Roken, who's the operator of the underground network, to help the Jedi. To help rescue Leia, and meeting a lot of resistance. You know, he keeps coming up with ideas and they keep shooting them down. And when he said, "She's 10 years old, I won't leave her there. Yeah. I'll go on my own." I felt moved by that. I was like,
mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, that is great. And the way he says it, he's not, I'm going to go. He's just like, I'll just go on my own then.
Yeah. What I got to do.
The resignation, the obligation, you know, it's just like, it's just what he has to do as a Jedi Knight.
Like, I cannot fail one more person.
Yeah, right.
And then, I'm not going to go through all the details, but throughout the episode, he's doing whatever he can possibly do to save her, putting himself in danger, going into the belly of the beast, fighting with his lightsaber, using the Force, you know, to do mind tricks and move things and, you know, just pulling out all his bag of tricks. So I think he really turned the corner, and after this, we're not going to see him shy away from a fight anymore, but we'll see.
Yeah. That's what I'm looking forward to. I'd like to replace my spa with one of those Bacta tanks. That'd be nice.
Hell yeah. I could use it right now. It's a Bacta for my back.
Yeah. Looks comfy.
All right, Rich.
I liked that. Yeah, I liked what you were saying about the Bacta tank too and how they were going back and forth between the two. I like that Vader is in his head, you know? And now Obi's kind of in Vader's head, and I get it. That they're you know, taking residence in the back of their minds, I hope. But I, you know, at the same time, I hope these reminders don't last the whole entire season. It's like, all right, I get it. They're in each other's heads, you know. It's like, let's not take any precious time away from some potential action going on here. But my next point was Leia being interrogated.
Yeah, that's great.
Kind of shed a new light on the original movie, A New Hope, for me. Now it's like, that's old hat for her now in this Star Wars universe, right? She's like, gave me a new perspective of her unbreakable constitution, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, I've been here, done that. You guys don't scare me. And props to that actress, Vivian Lyra Blair. Is that her name? She's doing a really convincing
very good
job.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's been great.
I'm not always 100% that it was a great idea to have another kid be the center like they have with Baby Yoda, and you know, it feels like a formula. They're like, oh, that works great, let's do it again. But she, whatever you think about that, she's really good. I think
she's nailing it. Yeah, it's always a risk, huh, with kid actors, you don't know.
I mean, look at Anakin. not to push too hard on that, but you know.
There was that moment where she looked very, very scared, and then you saw something flip in her mind, and she just kind of straightened up and held herself and says, I will not say anything about the, I will reveal nothing. And she became suddenly regal, which I thought was a really good interpretation for the young kid.
Yeah. She's acting beyond her years. Really good at acting like a princess. Princess Leia acting like a princess. Wouldn't be so great in real life like at the grocery store, right? But it sure is fun to watch right here at the show, I'll tell you that.
I'm going to be in the front of the line.
I demand this coupon.
Jonathan?
Well, I hope not to be too controversial, but fourth episode in, I'm starting to think that this is not the Kenobi series I was looking for. Mm-hmm. And perhaps it's, I think I was hoping for some kind of a Jedi Batman series where Obi-Wan was in the shadows kicking ass and fighting bad guys. But you know, that's not what we got. And what we have is understandable and it works. But to see a frightened, weak Obi-Wan barely able to use a force, let alone a lightsaber, is for me, is starting to drag a bit. And I still have faith and I still hope that in the next two episodes it will turn around. But I just feel it's just not hitting where I would love to have hit. But and I get that order that he's deeply affected by Order 66 and he has failings. But I always see him, Obi-Wan, as a gentleman, and a gentleman only falls so far. And you know, I think of you know, the movies The Great Escape or The Bridge Over the River Kwai, where you had the British officers in World War II, and no matter how far they fell, they always had a clean uniform and a certain standing. And but I feel that he's still in that he doesn't feel as Obi-Wan as I would like him to see this deep into the series. It's only six episodes long. And it was nice to see the spin of a lightsaber, but he still seems a bit clumsy and not flowing and in control. And I saw a review video where that fight scene was slightly sped up, and it looked right, you know. I can only think that Qui-Gon Jinn is going to resurrect him, and but with only two episodes, it will be a miraculous turnaround. But I'm still hoping, and I still have faith, and I still want to see it. So, but at this stage, I think I would like to see him a bit more in control and a bit more of the Obi-Wan of old.
Mm.
I bet we see Qui-Gon next week.
Yeah, I'm hoping. I hope it ends on a strong point, you know, where he has his confidence back in that last episode. I am looking forward to that. If I don't get that, or we don't get that, yeah, I might be a little disappointed too. But still got two more episodes.
I mean, I really don't think he's going to be like he was at his height in the Clone Wars, but I do think we're going to end on a really strong note with him.
I hope really so too. That. But it's just hard to watch, and it's been hard to watch for four episodes now. And I loved it in the first two episodes, but now it's just the pain is so much. I think there would still be an element of hello there in him, you know, that wouldn't have been lost, and that when he said I'm going to rescue Leia, there would be an element of you know, not flippancy, but. But, you know, everything seems so heavy and dark and full on, which it is. But, you know, an English gentleman, a knight, does not let that sort of thing rattle them. The danger of the moment, the seriousness of the moment is not always there. But perhaps we have a different Obi-Wan. But for me, I just want to see the Obi-Wan I've come to know and love.
Yeah, because
I'm surprised he hasn't turned to the bottle yet.
Yeah.
Isn't that what English gentlemen usually do? Turn to the bottle.
Exactly. Just a bit of whiskey in my tea.
In Star Wars, they're in the middle of the darkest time the galaxy's seen in forever, and they're all just like, woo-woo, shoot down those TIE fighters. And then back in the prequels, they're fighting a fucking war, and they're like, let the fun begin. So, this is a little different, right? They usually
his confidence back.
Yeah.
Well, those kids were born into it, right? It's like cell phones nowadays.
That's true.
But on the other hand, I mean, we first, you know, us older guys first met Ben Kenobi in Star Wars, and he was just this old wizard type guy living on the corner of or out in the desert, and who was a mentor to Luke and then tragically died. But then when you watch the prequels, it's like, wow, he just totally lost everything and then went into hiding. And then it was like, then what did he do? He just like stayed out in the, after all those adventures, he just like hung out in the desert for the next 40 years. God, that's so depressing.
But he still seemed charming and upbeat and then like, hello, Luke, well, this way, please. And still in control, you know?
I mean, at the end of Revenge of the Sith, it was just like, we just got spanked and now we have to hide.
That's true.
And so to me, actually, I feel like this is more than I thought we would ever see from him in those times.
Sure.
But yeah, I get what you're saying, though. It's just a bit like heavy.
I just feel like there's a bottom level, that a level that he doesn't go below in his depression and his, you know, I don't think for me that he would ever, that he would fall as low as he's got. I think there's a base to it where at some point he becomes English and in the face, you know, the stiff upper lip part of it, you know. And I think even in the face of like, you know, a charge of the light brigade, they're just still, you know, we'll have a cup of tea before we go.
Sure.
In, you know?
And even, I mean, like devil's advocate, I would say, well, I think they decided that to have him do that just shows how serious all this is for him. But but I even thought, like, hasn't he been out there for 10 years? You'd think he wouldn't just seem so shell-shocked after 10 years. Mm. You know, he would find a way to be like, hey, this is my life now.
It's a precarious situation for the writers, too, because you know how it turned. You already know what's going to happen, right? Yeah. And he's still got another 9 years to spend in the desert before
the
movie comes out. And so it's like, well, how did he write for that, you know?
But I just think they're giving him a place to go. And I've said this before, like we know how he is in Star Wars and he seems so at peace, confident, centered, wise. And so if they had started him out like that in this series, then he would have no place to go. So that's what they're doing, you know,
nowhere to go but up.
Yeah.
But I still feel it's kind of canon breaking because he was there to protect Luke. And in the desert, he's not just in the desert sort of hiding. He's there to protect Luke. And at any moment, he has to become the Jedi he was. And so how do you do that when your lightsabers are buried in the sand and you haven't been practicing, you haven't kept up your skills? And like, how are you going to protect anyone when you can't even move a small whatever it was on the spaspaceship, a tiny bit? And then in this series, I even think his blaster's a little lame.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because like, if someone attacks Luke and Obi-Wan's like starts crying, then that's not going to help.
But again, we have 2 episodes to go, and I still love this series and I'm enjoying it. But I need to get on with it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see because now I presume they're in this speeder, which I don't think is a long range thing. They have to get to a ship, so they'll go back to their hideout and they're being tracked, and then there'll be some big confrontation there. And so presumably, right? So it'll be interesting to see how he responds to that.
Yeah. I can see it working up to another confrontation with Vader.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh yeah, it has to be. Has to be. Yeah.
Yep. That would be so funny if it didn't happen. Like, they just don't.
just put their lightsabers down and walk away.
Just don't see Vader again.
Yeah, he goes back to Tatooine and he's just there in the bar hiding and just sort of like, oh, well, that was a bit of an adventure.
Now I'll have my tea. Okay, my turn. Let's see. Should I talk about Leia a little bit? Yeah, I'll talk about Leia since you already talked about Leia. So the first scene with Leia, she's sitting there in detention and yelling, "You can't keep me here, I'm a princess." And I thought, that's a little bit too cute for me. Like, Star Wars has always mixed dark things and cute things. And the cute is often controversial, like Ewoks. People, I didn't have any problem with them when I first saw them, but over the years, people were like, oh, they're teddy bears, or they're just not liked at all, like Jar Jar, who's detestable. Mm-hmm. But sometimes they work out better than anyone could have dreamt of, like Baby Yoda, which I suspect is why we're getting this. And you know, it's starting to feel a bit repetitive with Mando and Grogu. Mm. I watched The Bad Batch with little Omega, and now Obi-Wan and Leia.
Yeah, it's the old story of the wolf and the cub kind of thing, you know.
Even this one is just like when Mando had to go save Grogu from Giancarlo Esposito, you know, Moff Gideon, and he had to infiltrate his ship and everything. And it also feels a bit low stakes because we know Leia survives.
Yeah.
But there were some moments that moved me, like when Reva and Leia, Reva said, the people you're trying to protect, they are not coming for you. And Leia started looking anxious and almost started to cry. And I was like, dude, leave that fucking kid alone.
Even as a childless man, I still felt great empathy at that moment. I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
And, crossing a line here.
But then it was a little undercut when Leia refused to talk. And Reva says, it's time to make those tears real, which I didn't know if that meant that she was just faking. It would be more impactful if she actually was worried versus if she's just like, I don't care what you say. Then it's just like a cutesy little movie, right? Yeah. And then
I'm sassy.
And I also thought, as dark as it is to think about, wouldn't Reva be doing worse than just yelling at her? But then they take her to this interrogation room. She gets strapped to the machine and you hear that revving torture droid sound, but which calls to mind that big brown black torture droid in Star Wars. That was also going to torture Leia for information, just like here. We didn't see that. I guess it's similar tech. Torture tech sounds like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But then they were getting ready to inflict some pain, but then she got saved. So as cruel as it is to say, I'm glad that it was getting to that point. Otherwise, it seems like it's a baby movie, you know. It's like,
yeah,
right.
I was wondering how far they're gonna go too. I'm like, are they actually gonna, like in the movie with Han Solo, zap her a few times?
I mean, I'm glad I don't need to see that. I'm glad it didn't get to that point, but I just
but they got close.
Wanted to know their intentions. And then and also I wonder what the Empire considers doable at this point. I think it's early, and the other Inquisitors kept yelling at Reva, what are you doing? You shouldn't be hurting people or whatever. And there's still senators and protocols, but then again, they like kidnapped a senator's daughter and they were going to torture her. So, would they have just killed her after that? What repercussions
can there be? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if there's any repercussions. The only other thing I had to say about Leia was just when she held Ben's hand, I thought that was really cute and adorable.
Yeah, that was adorable.
Reminded me of my own kids.
But the one, again, I'm at a point where I'm on the fence. It does this break canon again? Because like when Leia records a message in R2-D2, it was like, you fought by my father's side in the Clone Wars, which he's calling out to Obi-Wan. Yeah. But wouldn't she say...
And also, you saved me.
You saved me from the Empire, you know? Like, why would you reference your father fighting with them when she's had this experience with Obi-Wan? It's like, you saved me from the Empire once before, I need you to do it again, you know?
Yeah.
So there are things... I feel kind of the writers are almost forgetting some of the things that are happening, or they're a bit inconvenient and to write this story, and they're small things, but for me they're beginning to accumulate.
Yeah, I think she only knows him as Ben.
Well,
hasn't made the connection yet, right?
No, but I was thinking that too. But then Reva said Obi-Wan is dead.
Yeah,
in this episode.
Yeah.
And she called him Kenobi at some other point. So theory smashed.
Yeah. And Leia's smart enough to realize that to have the same last name and then they're both Jedi, perhaps Obi-Wan and Ben are the same person.
right. Yeah. Clark Kent, you know, with glasses. Superman without glasses.
Yeah.
All right, Rich, what's your next one?
Yeah, kind of building on that, you know, when they were in the interrogation room, I was a little confused about what Reva was trying to get out of Leia. She wanted info on where. What did she want? She wanted information. She wanted the location, like, where all the safe houses were, right?
All the safe houses, yeah.
Is that what it was? And then I'm like, what makes you think this little 10-year-old kid's going to know something like that?
Yeah. Like, we were in a forest somewhere and then we went on a spaceship.
Right. You've talked to 10-year-old kids, right? They don't know nothing.
Yeah. That's a good point. I don't know. She should have just said that. I don't know. We were on a spaceship and then we were in a room.
Yeah, I was running down a hallway from a safe house, but I don't know where all the other ones are.
Yeah.
Although she does act like a 35-year-old woman.
Right. At the young
I was just wondering if I missed something or not, because I was like, well, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But
I think they want to know. Yeah, that is true. What do they want to know? Because Reva was already where Leia was. That's
Reva
where she
said,
got her.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, she said we thought it was a joke, or we thought it wasn't true, and then they found two, right? She said we found two underground safe houses in two different systems, and she wanted to know where the rest were. And I'm like, how would anybody know that? I mean, that's not something you would advertise. Yeah.
Or maybe she wanted to know where Obi-Wan was, but I don't think Leia knows that either, so I don't know.
The only thing I could think of is that Reva thought she would have overheard from her father or overheard from Kenobi the location of the other two places. Might have had some information that she'd overheard rather than being involved in the briefing.
But the way Leia's playing it is she's admitting she knows but refuses to tell. And I would have at least tried if I was a kid saying, I don't know.
Can I have some ice cream?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's what confused me, because she literally said, I would never tell you, or I will never tell you. Or
and then she's like, okay, I'll tell you, but let me tell my father first.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Which is pretty slick.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, Jonathan?
All right, so I want to talk about the escape in general. And again, I'm on the fence, and I kind of struggled to take it. It seriously, there are too many things that made me kind of laugh.
Mm-hmm. And there were some cool moments and some dumb moments.
Yeah, and some dumb moments. And which kind of, it reminded me a bit of Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, where Indy's running and things happen coincidentally and they're kind of amusing, but he eventually gets out of it. But it's all kind of a bit of a rollicking ride. But I think Star Wars is slightly more serious, and I found that there were too many callbacks when the whole thing is a callback, you know, with the whole show is a callback because it looks beautiful, looks very Star Wars, they've got it so right, but then they'll do the communicator on the table, the same shot of the communicator that C-3PO picked up in A New
Luke
Hope.
Was in the trash compactor.
Oh, yeah. 3PO, 3PO. On the
Death Star. Yeah. And you know, him hiding behind the wall and doing the force distraction. And but unfortunately the moment that just broke it for me was seeing the youngling frozen in the amber tank, but he still had his silly hat on. And like that side, and it was an alien kid, and it didn't look quite right, and I just laughed out loud rather than it being a dark moment, because I hated those hats at the best of times, because I don't know what they're for, you know. And so that kind of made me laugh, and then after that I was just like,
that's not like an Indiana Jones where they're trying to be funny.
No, that was meant to be dum dum.
Yeah, right.
But I'm just like, and the Jedi in the dark was great, but then the, you know, when he lights the lightsaber in the dark torture room and cuts that guy in half, and then goes after the other guy, and he made some remark which I've heard is a reference to some video game. You'll never get out of this place. And whereas he'd just seen his mate get cut in half, you'd think he'd be taking things a little bit more seriously.
Yeah, could you imagine being the last stormtrooper in a dark room with a Jedi? Yeah. It's like you're fucked.
You
just stop running or firing blindly.
I'd be like, don't cut me in half.
I'm sorry.
But the blue light looked fantastic when it comes up. But it still, for me, looks a little slow. And hopefully that's still purposefully, that they're just holding them back a little bit.
Well, he just picked it up for the first time in years.
True. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, Michael Jordan can still hit can still dunk, you know, and hit a free throw. And
maybe we should see.
But maybe not dunk.
He, like, sucks now.
Yeah, let's challenge. Hey, Michael. Yeah. He needs a ladder.
I'm sure you're probably
right.
He
needs that Nike endorsement.
Yeah. But the Illyria Sands, her escape was hilarious when she was too, like the, what's her name? The Game of Thrones
Tala.
Tala, yeah. Who looks great, I think, and sounds great. And I like her character. She looks fantastic in that uniform. But her escape from the two stormtroopers was really funny when she kind of bonks the helmet off one of them and steals the blaster and shoots them and just kind of
that
runs away.
That was really lame. I mean, they have this armor on and it seems totally ineffective against blasters, but you could sort of be like, okay, I guess the Empire cheaped out on the armor. But when someone hits you in the face and you just go, oh, then it's like, yeah, come on.
Like they just fell over.
Yeah.
And but it brings me to Reva because her English, the Leia's English accent and in the Empire uniform, she feels very Empire. But Reva's American accent and kind of real modern day delivery just pulls me out of it slightly. And I couldn't figure out what it was that kept pulling me up, and I realized it was the Empire have English accents and the Rebellion have American, and that's kind of been the way it's always been, except for Rey, because apparently she had a terrible American accent, so they were like, just do the English one.
Interesting.
That's a good point. I'm kind of curious about Reva's character too. I was like, I think she's up to something. I mean, it looks more and more like she just wants to be, you know, right hand to Darth Vader. But yeah. I don't know. Maybe she's still up to something. Maybe she wants to find Kenobi, and this is the only way she can do it. You know, so that you know she can, I don't know, do something else.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And just a couple more. Sorry, a bit of nitpicking session for me. You know, I love Star Wars, but this one kind of had me.
There was a lot.
Yeah, and then we have Obi-Wan in the overcoat trying to escape with it. He looked like a homeless man with that beard, you know, and he's like the only...
And just because the alarm went off, everybody's running around all crazy and they're not like looking for threats or anything.
The klaxon's going off and they're just walking through. No one else has a beard and he's like a homeless hunchback of Notre Dame with the layer underneath it. And no one noticed him.
With his off-color green trench coat with four legs.
Yeah, which we've never seen in Star Wars before. An
at least
Empire
they didn't, like,
coat.
Put her on his shoulders and have her, like, wearing a trench coat.
and then when they finally escape and you know, fine with the speeders coming in and being super accurate and shooting everyone and great throwing the power cell up at the speeder and blowing it up. But then when they escape and they go up, and I think you can actually see the TIE fighters all hanging there. And I was expecting her to turn around and go, release the TIE fighters and have an epic chase after them because they're all just hanging there ready to go. But no, they just flew off into the distance and escaped fairly easily.
Well, that was intentional.
Yeah, that lends credence to her claim that she let him go.
Because I thought the same thing. I'm like, wow, she really, really messed up letting Leia get away. Yeah. And so I was so glad. I was like, oh, I have underestimated you.
I was going to say, did you notice that? There was a couple of times where everyone changed their mind like really quick. Like Roken, you know, when Obi-Wan went to him for help. He was
right.
Like, you know, we gotta go get Leia. He's like, no way, man. I would never do that. I would never risk helping you to get your friend. And then
Cut to
a minute later, he's like, hey, man, if you want my help, you got it.
Yeah, same, easily convinced. Yeah.
Easily. And then same with Vader, you know, when he was about to destroy Reva, he was pissed. He had her up, you know, with force choking her. And then just like 30 seconds later, he's like, perhaps I've underestimated.
That made more sense because she said, I'm tracking them. And it was, you know, if they're going to lead you exactly where you were trying to find out where it is, then that's perfect.
But then that brings me to one more kind of amusing thing that blows my theory from last week out of the water, that Vader is kind of limited in his movement, was when he came stomping out of the doorway at the end when he was like walked to came. Do you remember that bit? He came stomping out, walking really fast, and then grabbed Reva by the neck with a force choke. But he moved quite quickly, much to my surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He scares me.
Yeah, which is good.
He still scares me.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay. Well, I'm going to talk about sneaking into Fortress Inquisitorius 2, and I may have a few more nitpicks, but I'll try to go light since this is... everybody's like,
but I still love it.
Guys.
I still love it. But, you know.
I mean, I do. I've always liked stories where people infiltrate areas that are just full of enemies, like in the Death Star, or we used to watch Robotech, Rich, when they went into the Robotech master ship, you know, stuff like that.
So, very video game-ish.
Yeah. It's thrilling when they're in the belly of the beast, so to speak. So they do this classic Star Wars vector hologram planning sequence, and we learn the ocean moon Nur is where the fortress is located. It's in the same system as Mustafar, the lava planet. So that was interesting.
Yeah, and then a very elemental system. You've got water, you've got lava.
Right, it's all balanced. And then one woman says Fortress Inquisitorius is impenetrable. And I'm like, and I don't think so. And then Obi-Wan says, I don't see any shields. Oh, that's because no one would be stupid enough to attack them. And I'm like, yeah, that's why I don't have any locks on my doors, because no one would be dumb enough to break into my house.
Yeah.
Because reasons. And then
very convenient.
Yeah. I think the real reason was they didn't have time for a sequence about disabling the shield generator like they usually have. Mm-hmm.
Sure. It's all very a short Star episode. Wars,
yeah, it was a short. It was the shortest one so far. And then Obi-Wan mentions using T-47s to rescue Leia, and one person says those speeders are for hauling sewage. Those are the same ones that Luke flew on Hoth when he used the towing cable to trip the big AT-AT walkers.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And, but then Tala, she has officer clearance and she'll take him. I kind of like that. It was just the two of them going in. Mm. And, then they get there and the security guy, see, this is another one, tells Tala there's no admittance without clearance. And this isn't your sector and I can't let you through. And she's like, okay, go right in.
Who I am?
Yeah.
And we've never seen that work before in any movie ever.
Yeah. Well, in a previous episode too, everyone just walked through the checkpoint. They didn't know what he was ever paused.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, I'll tell your boss. Oh, yeah. Okay. Go right in. That's heavy security right there.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Do you want me to report you to your superiors?
Yeah.
I'm telling.
I mean, they should like at least be like, okay, let me call and see if they're expecting you or if it's okay. You know, they have communicators. I just thought, that's kind of weak. It's so easy to get through.
And the actor didn't look like he was easily intimidated. The guy playing the security officer, he seemed like tall and formidable and in control, but then suddenly she's like, and you are? And he's like, oh, no.
Yeah,
suddenly
I'm sorry. I mean, she was a superior officer, and I guess the point is she spent years building up her credibility. Now she's willing to blow all of that for this, by the way, but I guess it's super important because if Leia gives up the information, then her whole operation could be ruined. So she gets in and she opens this entry port underneath for Obi-Wan to swim through. By the way, he's using the same kind of underwater breather like in Phantom Menace when they went
to
the Gungans. And that was in Clone Wars a couple times too. And then some guy questions Tala, and I guess she either knocked him out or killed him. I think it was off screen.
Oh, she definitely broke a neck. There's a lot of neck breaking in this series. Mm.
Do we see that?
Casual.
I might have missed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they took him behind and she kind of wraps the arm around. Then you hear a click and then he's kind of dead on the floor.
Mm.
Ooh,
that's brutal. Intense.
Yeah.
And then he goes down to the Jedi tomb. And when he sees the youngling, that's when he hears Leia crying out, I guess because of the Force, right? And then he calls Tala for a distraction. So she just calls into the torture room. Yeah. Can you tell her to come out? It's really important. And then,
I'm just about to torture this girl.
Just 1 minute. Very Spaceballs for a second.
There. Yeah, it was.
and then she's making up a lie about where this whole or their whole operation is. And just like Leia lied to Tarkin about the rebels on Dantooine and Star Wars. Mm. But I'm glad Reva didn't just believe her. She's like, yeah, suspicious, you know? And then she says, you're a spy. And then Tala says, yes, I am a spy for the Empire. And I've spent 2 years undercover trying to find out where these Jedi were hidden. But I couldn't tell anyone because why? Why would anyone believe that?
Yeah, I just like as soon as like on that scene, as soon as Vader starts walking down the street, surely if she's in that position, she runs out and like they're in here.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
there's no need to keep it secret, you know.
Why would you decide to be a spy if you're with the Empire and not tell your commanding officers?
And not tell anyone. Yeah,
yeah, that is. I forgot why she said why, but it was just like ridiculous.
I didn't buy it.
And then Reva was like, I like, you know, someone who lies for me or something like that. Let's send you to the interrogation room. So at least she didn't just take it for granted. But I would just be like, okay, put this woman in the brig right now. And then the alarm gets
Kappa
triggered. Yeah. And Tala is
Before we move on, I wanted to bring up the conveniently spaced terminals that were very convenient. And she's kind of whispering, you know, okay, I'm in. And the guy just looks at her and hearing her, like, what is this place? What are they up to here? And he looks at her.
I'm opening a door for you.
Yeah. He doesn't even say anything. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it's Star Wars, so it's like fun.
And then they go to sneak out, and Reva sees them at the opening area, and then the speeder comes just in time to blast everyone because there's no shields.
Yeah.
And then one random dude gets killed to try to give it some weight, but we don't know him, so we don't care.
Yeah, so, exactly. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Wade, and it's been memed. It's obviously, you know, of course it's been memed straight away that everyone's like, we shall miss Wade. Long live Wade. Wade was the best.
So important.
Yeah.
All right. I think the rest of my
gone
stuff
too
is
soon.
A little more positive, but what do you got, Rich?
For notes?
You're done with your points?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I am.
What about you, Jonathan? Do you have any more main points?
No, we've done. I think we've done our three. Let's see if I'm good, ready for notes.
Okay. Let me do a few more. So Reva, I kept getting Reva's name wrong last time. I was saying Revan or something. Sorry about that. Reva rhymes with Rima. So
hi Rima.
Hi Rima. So I don't know if she listens. Hopefully. More signs that Reva was the Padawan from the first scene, I think.
Oh, yeah?
Rich, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because she says, the braver you seem, the more afraid you are. I learned that as a child.
Yeah.
I think my theory is she's mad the Jedi ran away and didn't save her, and she's like, they were cowards, even though they seemed brave. She also says, these people will leave you to die, which is a little more straightforward. And she said, I had a droid when I was younger, too. It was taken from me like everything else. So I think she's just really mad at the Jedi. And you keep saying, Rich, there's something else going on with her. I'm pretty sure it's just that simple.
Yeah.
You just think that she's pissed because nobody ever came back for him?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, because I remember, like, when Order 66 happened, Obi-Wan and Anakin, weren't they both like, no, not Anakin, Yoda were both like, don't go back to the temple, you know, don't, yeah, that's over. Everyone there screwed. Everybody
that was
scattered.
In Rebels. We heard a
radio
transmission from Obi-Wan saying not to go back in the Rebels show. But I think we'll get some story from her in the next two episodes about the torture she underwent when she was trained as an Inquisitor, and she blames the Jedi for that instead of blaming Darth Vader or something.
Yeah. Very well be.
But I can't, hopefully she'll get a Darth Vader redemption at the time of her death, but I can't see how she can be redeemed. Because she would have killed, even by just slicing that old lady's hand off, you know, she's clearly killed and tortured many, many people over the years. So, you know, I don't know a last minute to turn to the light side is really going to help her. But be interesting to see how they handle it.
That's Star Wars-y, though, I mean, for you.
That's true.
I mean, you know, Darth Vader ended up going back, right? Sort of.
But then he died immediately. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, for a second, who knows what, like, the next day you'd be like, what was I thinking?
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm evil.
Let me get that uniform back on.
I'm in a moment of weakness. Sorry.
Sorry, sir.
I am the emperor now.
Exactly. So I
come on, Jason, you got to do a Vader impression.
I can't do it. Richard's going to do it at the end.
Okay. Oh, no.
Yeah, get ready. So I had also had a point about action and cool stuff. The Jedi tomb we already talked about. When they were stuck in the hallway and you could see they're underwater and deflecting blaster bolts caused the window to crack and he had to try to keep it secure with the Force. I thought that was pretty cool. And I think because this location was also featured in Jedi Fallen Order, the game, including the interrogation room. Same.
Right.
And so, but then I also like the stormtroopers are looking through this window going, look, he's using the, I don't know if they could see what was going on, but it's, they're looking through a window of a door. Look, he's, the window's about to break and all the water's going to come in. We got to get in there.
Yeah.
As soon as possible. And they get in and get drowned.
Yeah. But he could hardly move a chess piece across the desk in the opening scene, and now he's holding back the entire ocean, you know.
Right. I thought about that, too. But he's got his... Come on.
He's got his adrenaline going.
Tens of thousands of pounds.
For me, I was more critical of the storm... I mean, if I was one of the stormtroopers, like, wait, we shouldn't probably be going
just
in there.
Close this door and call someone.
Yeah. And
well, a thinking... A stormtrooper, a reasoning stormtrooper wouldn't be Star Wars-y.
That's true. Good point. Yeah. And it was pretty cool looking through at the end, seeing them floating in there, just all morbid.
Sorry, but I did enjoy that when the door opened a crack, I'm like, just fire through the crack in the door. And lo and behold, they actually started firing through the crack, through the small opening in the door.
That's good. Yeah. Sanity.
Sanity.
And then I have my lore and references point. You mentioned he twirled his saber like he did used to do in the prequels. This guy Roken called him General, so he was known as General Kenobi in the Clone Wars. So I guess people still know that.
Yeah.
Tala, the communication device we already mentioned, the breathing device. Reva uses that same like. Trying to force someone's mind open like Kylo Ren tried with Leia. And Reva did that with that Haja Estri in part two. And you mentioned Obi-Wan used that distraction thing with the stormtroopers like in Star Wars. He just kind of points in one direction and they're like, what was that? And they start going that way.
Going back to the mind probe, and I thought it was super cute when Leia just goes, are we having a staring contest? But her ability to deflect the mind probe was surely that reveals her as a Force user and changes the whole dynamic of the relationship,
right?
But she did say you're strong or something.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and then the Jedi. I mean, what I didn't recognize any of the Jedi, but I looked up what other people thought, and they. Mostly it seems like people think, well, this could be this one and this could be this one.
Right.
So one of them looks like Luminara Unduli, which is in the Clone Wars. She was the master of Padawan Barriss Offee, who had a big story in the Clone Wars. I don't know if I should give away what that was, but it was a big story. And she's also one of the voices heard by Rey in Rise of Skywalker when she heard all the voices of the past Jedi at the end.
Okay.
Wow.
One kind of looked like Quinlan Vos, which Obi-Wan saw on the scrawled on the wall last time, and we were like, me and Eric were like, oh, maybe we'll get to see him. Well, maybe we just did in his tomb. Tara Sanubi is this old Jedi who trained younglings and was a mentor to Ahsoka
in
Clone Wars. Maybe another council member, Oppo Rankisis or something, has a long beard, appeared in Phantom Menace. And one looked like it could possibly be Mace Windu. But it was from very far away and at an angle.
Oh, really? I didn't notice that one. Yeah.
And and then there was the kid, the youngling, like the ones that Anakin was about to kill with the funny hat.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a monster, because that was one of the most terrifying moments when Anakin ignited his lightsaber in front of the younglings, and the youngling took a little step back. I was just like, oh my God, this is terrifying at the time.
And the way that kid looks startled, they must have done something to actually startle him.
Surprise.
Because
him,
it really added to that moment of, oh my God, this is horrible.
That step back, you know?
Yeah. I'm so glad we didn't have to see the next couple minutes of that.
Exactly.
And the last thing here is
R-rated Star Wars.
is Tala tries to convince Reva that Obi-Wan's hiding on the planet Florum, which is where Clone Wars character Hondo's home planet is, where he and his pirates hang out.
Right. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Love Hondo.
Yeah, Hondo's good. All right, let's get into notes, Rich.
Hmm. I wonder if a Jedi can use the Force to dry their clothes. You notice how quickly Obi-Wan dried off?
Yeah, you can force shake like a dog.
Yeah. Just will the water off the clothes. That would
that's
be cool.
True. That's true.
I'd be using it for all kinds of stuff. Yeah. Holding my clothes.
Yeah. The only other note I had was from Roken.
Getting free stuff everywhere.
Flipping burgers.
Yeah. You will give me that candy.
Guess that's not very noble.
Roken, when Obi-Wan is trying to convince him to go after Leia, he's like, you know, she's strong with the Force or something like that. And well, so does every other kid making a rock float from here to Coruscant. I thought, yeah, that's true. I mean, that's a good point. You know, the Empire is after pretty much anybody that's even remotely Force sensitive. So that's a little bit scary.
Yeah, it's interesting. I like it.
Yeah, certainly a dark time, and you know, it's a really good time for them to be exploring, and I hope we see more of it, of the Empire just going, you know, galaxy wide, hunting down any Force sensitive person. And
yeah,
maybe we'll see that in the Ahsoka.
That is one reason why I actually am digging this series as much as I dogged on this episode, because what a great thing to focus on these dark side Force users going around hunting Jedi. That's good, you know?
Yeah. And I loved going back, and I kind of miss the Grand Inquisitor now that we're this far in, because going back to, I thought it was really interesting how his method of hunting the Jedi was to use their goodness against them, and to kind of torture innocents to try and draw out the Jedi. Mm-hmm. And I hope we explore that more, because I thought that was a really interesting dynamic.
Yep. That's all you had, Rich, for notes?
Yeah, pretty much. It just really, you know, like you guys are talking about, just the Empire as an entity, a thing. They're like, they're evil. Yeah. You know, I mean, most people may not see that on the surface, but, you know, we have the privy of seeing it from, you know, the Jedi's point of view, and they are not a good organization.
No.
No.
The uniforms are too cool.
Jonathan?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the epic wide shots that we've seen in this episode and previous ones. And I think, Rich, you said this once, and it really stuck with me. Anything that starts in space is going to be good. And although it didn't start in space, it was the wide shot of the ship coming out of hyperspace and turning up at the water planet of Nur, which looked fantastic. And there was a wide shot of the fortress entrance with the, you know, the new Imperial March take theme. And then it was a beautiful wide shot with Obi-Wan entering the facility underwater. And there was that cut where there was that big starfish sucking to the side of the fortress. And then
I'm going to go back and rewatch it now.
Yeah. And then there was a beautiful wide shot when Vader is force choking Reva, and they cut really far back, and you saw the stormtroopers, Imperial, and just the beautiful architecture of the room.
And that was a good shot.
Mm.
And they're almost like silhouettes, huh?
Yeah, well, it brings me to the other idea of George Lucas when he was doing the original trilogy. He really kind of worked on the every frame a painting. So every shot is on sticks. So, you know, so every shot is framed perfectly, and the characters move within the frame. But I noticed within this one, which kind of also added to it being a little bit off for me, that there was, it had a handheld feeling. Mm-hmm. So even when the wide shots, there was a slight movement of the camera as if it was the camera was on someone's shoulder. And and that is kind of not Star Wars, maybe that Star Wars TV. And it worked very well in I'm spacing on the name of when they went to get the plans on the
Rogue One.
Yeah. Uh-huh. On Rogue One. Yeah. Yeah. There was a lot of handheld camera in so
yeah. Cuz that was like one, fog of war kind of feeling
or war, something. Exactly. Yeah. And so I was only on second viewing of this episode I noticed there was that movement in the camera that which is very different to the traditional way of filming Star Wars, but I did really appreciate that they took the time to do these epic wide establishing shots.
Do you have a background in film?
I'm a photographer, so background in that. But I've watched the odd Star Wars documentary in my time.
Yeah,
there's
so
many of them. They're great. I mean,
and I found a lot of the old ones from the 80s and 90s on YouTube, and they're really interesting to watch.
Yeah.
Cool. Like I felt like this show is not as cinematic as Star Wars usually is, and I can't really totally put my finger on it because I'm not versed in the language of film, but it's beautiful. Clearly the design, the set design is incredible, but it is the filming techniques one way or another that's just not doing it for me. It feels more like a TV show than a movie.
Exactly.
And I think it should feel like a movie, but it did work for me on the mining colony with Darth Vader and Obi-Wan last week. That feel, fog of war type feel, I think lend itself really well to that sequence. But here with this break in, you want it to feel more like regular Star Wars in the filming techniques too, I think.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Really? Huh. Yeah. I didn't get that. I thought this was the most Star Warsy episode out of all of them.
For me, a lot of ways it really was. Yeah, but just not the filming style.
I mean, lots of callbacks.
Yeah.
And like I said before, the look and feel of it, the uniforms are perfect.
The looks,
The corridors are perfect. All of that is perfect.
I mean, it's even cooler than a lot of stuff in Star Wars. The design of the Fortress Inquisitorius is so cool.
Yeah.
Do you know how they filmed it? Did they build sets, or did they do that like giant dome where they projected it?
Thing as Mandalorian.
I think they're using the volume, which is so much better than green screens, but it still has its limitations because
you almost see them
walk into gone
like a video game or something. Have you seen the trailer for Andor?
Yeah,
it looks fantastic, and apparently they didn't use that for that series.
Right. Oh, yeah, they built a massive set in England for Andor. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm curious. I don't want to get my hopes up too high, but it looks pretty cool.
But have a look at it. I only noticed noticed it on the second viewing, but I think that might be it. The slight shaky cam rather than being on sticks.
Because I mean, you can see some directors have just a way of moving the camera and getting the right angles that just totally elevate it. And other directors are more workmanlike. And it's more about just put a camera there. It's about the characters or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like you've watched the Dumb and Dumber movies, the Farrelly Brothers. They shoot it like a sitcom.
Right.
Yeah. This show feels more like that to me.
Yeah.
For some reason.
It doesn't feel like, it does occasionally, but does, yeah, occasionally, like in the wide shots, because that's maybe a computer operator. You know, just designing it, but when they shoot it, it just doesn't have that feel. It doesn't feel like they have a great director of photography on it framing those shots properly.
And Mandalorian, on the other hand, does.
Mandalorian does
pretty
cinematic, and I feel like I like the action scenes, but it just felt a little bit slow, and I don't think they shot the action scenes as well as they could, because when you see an action scene shot really well with the perfect cuts, the perfect angles, the right construction, it all feels very quick and dynamic and forceful. But
I
felt it just was a step slow.
Yep.
Man, you know what would be cool is if Sam Raimi directed an episode. That would be badass, man, with his creative camera angle.
Yeah. Did you watch Doctor Strange?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, you gotta see that.
I know. I even heard the man himself makes a cameo.
Oh, yeah. So. I want to see that with you. It's so great. I had a couple. Are you done with your notes, Jonathan?
Yep.
Okay. I just had a couple because we covered most of it. We've been saying John Williams did the score, but apparently he only did the opening theme, not all the music. Natalie Holt is the composer. She worked on Loki, and I think she's doing fine.
Oh, I think she's doing great.
Yeah, music is good. Music's good.
Yeah.
And then Roken is played by O'Shea Jackson Jr., who is Ice Cube's son and starred as his father in Straight Outta Compton.
That's cool. Interesting. Yeah.
Wow.
That's funny.
All right. That's it for this one. Sorry, everybody, if you loved it and we were a bit of a downer. Hopefully we pointed out enough of the good stuff that we liked and enlightened you on some things you might not have heard about. And for now, we'll take a little break, but there is more to come. Stay with us. Okay, we're back. It's time for some news. Vanity Fair interviewed writer Joby Harolds. This was after last week's episode, but I thought it was interesting. I'll read a couple of the questions I thought were most interesting. They said, everyone has noted young Leia's sassy asides. What influence did Carrie Fisher have on how you wrote her? He says, the goal was to craft the character in such a way that honored what Carrie Fisher had done, but also you got to play a little bit of the nature-nurture question. Where you see she's the best of her mother and father, Natalie Portman's Padme Amidala and Hayden Christensen's Anakin Skywalker, but you also get to see her adopted parents and how they have formed who she becomes too. She's very much a byproduct of all of those people, and we're getting to see the untold story of how Obi-Wan was part of her growing up too. That now informs, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope. It helped explain why she would call her son Ben one day. There are lovely pieces of the puzzle that are now complete that we didn't even know needed to be completed. So that's a good point. Like, it kind of makes some things not make sense as much, but it makes other things make sense even more.
Yeah.
You know, they say in episode 2, Reva drives her lightsaber into her superior, the Grand Inquisitor. Yet we saw him meet his end a different way in the animated Rebel show. Is there a break in canon there? He says, I'm sorry, there's a problem with my Zoom, I didn't hear that. No, I'm just kidding. He says, could you say that again? No, he kind of says the same. He says, as you know, we would never break, he says, as you know, we would never break canon. So that's all I'll say. Canon is everything.
Interesting.
So he's aware.
Yeah.
They say the sequence where Vader's walking down the street slaying innocent bystanders has people saying this is the scariest Vader's ever been. He goes, it was 1,000% the intention. From a Vader point of view, we're all living with the memory of the end of Rogue One and how effective that was.
Yeah.
It's very gratifying to see Vader finally be unleashed in a sequence like that. So we wanted to try to trump it if we could. It was a lot more extreme at one point. I got pulled back a little bit on that. There were entrails.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Was he ripping him in half or something?
I just made that part up. He says, it was so important to define Vader's anger and rage. There's an emotionality to the choices he's making that are a little further than we're used to seeing with Vader. He's pushed a little more than the Vader we know. Obi-Wan isn't the finished article before the original Star Wars, and we can look at Vader in the same way. He's emotionally invested in that hunt to the same degree that Obi-Wan's emotionally invested in running away. What a tremendous vehicle to try to articulate rage when you have Darth Vader on the board and you have that silhouette. It's a scary sequence, but it was entirely by design and had to be because everyone's running from something that's terrifying. Really? Is everyone? I mean, does he mean everyone or everyone in that scene? Maybe he's got some demons.
Everyone.
Yeah.
Let's see. They say they finally come face to face and obviously there's a lightsaber duel. But when Vader gets the upper hand, he ignites some fuel and tries to burn Obi-Wan alive as he burned in the lava when Obi-Wan defeated him in their last encounter. How did you approach that? Tell me about the process of creating that moment. He says his choice is revealing the character beneath and the torture beneath, the pain inflicted and the eye for an eye of it all. It's a chance to hint at something beneath the mask. Vader can't be talking about, you know, his feelings. So it has to be an action. That comes from dragging people down the street behind you to try to pull the Jedi out of hiding. And that comes in inflicting the same pain upon the Jedi that he did to you. It's awful, but he should be awful. He's Darth Vader.
Yep.
Yep. And then Hollywood Reporter also talked to that guy. They asked, so how did Reva figure out that Vader is Anakin Skywalker? That's previously been a well-kept secret that people have died over.
Right.
He says, you're cutting out again. What was that? Say what? He says,
These are not the questions that...
Interview is over.
This interview is hard.
He says, I love that Reva is this mystery box, so I try to speak to her as little as possible, and I'm going to keep it that way. But the notion of having a character that we don't know on a legacy show where we do know everything and everybody, that is part of the fun of the show. So the less said about her, the better, considering there are very few people in places where you don't know what is happening. And he also said, I've completely focused on Obi-Wan Kenobi being episode 3.5. So between the prequels and the original, as it had to marry the storytelling choices between those two trilogies. Ultimately, I'm an original trilogy kid. That's what I love. And that's the calm and the precision with which we tried to focus on this show. We tried to echo that mythic feeling storytelling. That's cool.
Good.
Including all the goofy moments that make it Star Wars.
Yeah. And then last, they said, I've always believed that A New Hope was Vader and Obi-Wan's first and only reunion since their fateful duel in Revenge of the Sith, but that's no longer the case, obviously. Was there a line in A New Hope that gave you some wiggle room with regard to them having more encounters? Say again, I can't hear you.
These are not the questions you should be asking.
He says, it was much the opposite. There was no line in A New Hope that said we couldn't. One could argue that Obi-Wan's true. From a certain point of view thing is obviously revisionist storytelling in regard to the original trilogy, or it's another way of saying there are gray areas and things we don't know. There's nothing wrong with uncovering the past and its truths in storytelling, so it never felt wrong to me.
Yep, fair enough.
Okay, that's it for the news. Let's get into some listener feedback. Rich?
Elisa Iranga writes, very Star Wars rescue, then escape type episode. Enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. Alma Contreras. I loved seeing Obi wielding his lightsaber. This episode was good. Can you believe there are only two episodes left? Yeah. I know. There's a lot to wrap up.
It's a short series.
Hope they're good. I hope we're cheering after these next two. David Whaley says, to be honest, it's the best one of the series yet. The first few were a slow grind, almost a little too Disney-fied for me, but this one just had a more true Star Wars feel.
Hmm. Yep, it was faster than the early ones. There was some good action in it. Mm-hmm.
Good action, yeah.
Derek O'Neill, I enjoyed this episode loads. I only just made the connection this week that Leia called her son Ben Solo. It makes a lot of sense after how much Ben Kenobi did for her in her life.
Mm-hmm. True.
Adam Gaisley, still trying to figure out what Reva's specific issue with Obi-Wan is. I'm also getting the feeling that she has no real affiliation to the Inquisitors or Vader, and she's playing both sides with her own objective. Does she want to uncover the path for them or for her own reasons?
Ah, see, Adam's on my side with that. Yeah, I agree, Adam.
Conspiracy theorists. Barry Evett says, I loved Leia's scenes, and the action was good. There was some nice tension building between the third sister and Tala. I can't wait to see how things play out with Vader and Obi-Wan, as well as with the third sister. Nice suspense builder leading into the final two episodes.
David Gardner, it's more Star Wars with great visuals and a bit of nostalgia. That gets it to an 8 out of 10 before anything else. There are some weaknesses in the storytelling, but I'm still all for it. I did like how they were not obvious on the tracker until the end. 1,000 times better than FTWD for sure.
The Walking Dead. Oh yeah, we didn't mention it, but I guess the tracker's in her little toy robot Lola, right?
Yeah.
I kind of like that.
I never trusted that little droid.
Smash it.
All right. Alex Baelish. I love how the whole series is so gritty, like the original Star Wars was. Seeing Obi-Wan's fall and rise from the Force is heartbreaking and amazing to watch. I love how they always give us more than we ask for, meaning the base on Mustafar had all those dead Jedi as well as younglings as a shrine or trophy room for anyone to see. Layla once again stole the show. She is what anyone would think Leia would be at that age. I love how they're weaving the story to make it fit with the bigger Star Wars picture. And I guess that's the water moon of Nur rather than Mustafar.
I think that's what he meant. And then we got an email from Pat Regan who says, "Hey fellas, on the speculation that Reva was a Padawan before her time with the Empire, I believe I have more backup. It looks like Reva is the only Inquisitor that holsters her lightsaber on her waist. Her sabers collapse, so the spinning function that the Grand Inquisitor uses to take out Flea is not functional as well. I believe this is another sign that Reva was trained by the Jedi. She stuck out her fighting style with what she was taught before the Inquisitor's program." Boom. Love the pop.
Boom. That's a good observation, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, and someone also said that Vader, because there's like various styles of lightsaber fighting that have been documented and everything, and like Dooku has a certain their forms, like in martial arts or something, or fencing, I guess. And someone was saying that Darth Vader is still using a style more like he did in Clone Wars here than what he eventually goes to in the original trilogy, which I think is kind of interesting.
Yeah. How would you describe Yoda's style? Wind up toy.
I kind of liked that when that came up. I remember him just kind of drawing himself up, filling himself with the force. It's like they pulled a big long string on his back and then away he went.
He stuck his hand out and his lightsaber like came out of his robe into his hand.
He's see, like right curly.
Up
until
that point, it was great. Yeah. Okay, and then we have one call from Enwen and her daughter, Leia, who she named after Princess Leia. Here we go.
Hey guys, it's Enwen here. I first saw Star Wars A New Hope in the theater with my parents when I was 4 when it came out, and I apparently ran around the theater just playing and being silly, except for every moment that Leia was on screen and I was transfixed. She was probably my first on-screen hero. And I ended up marrying someone who did their thesis on the art of Star Wars, and we named our daughter Leia, and it's been really fun to watch this show with my kids. So I wanted to ask you, Leia, what you think. What do you think of Obi-Wan, the TV show?
I really like it, and it's really fun.
And what do you like most about it?
Princess Leia, because She's like really fierce, and she looks like me, and she's Cersei and savage.
Cool. And what do you think is going to happen next?
I think the third sister's going to get kicked out of the squad.
She's going to get kicked out of the squad. Why?
Because she's like really cruel and evil and mean.
Yeah. Isn't that part of being in the Empire? You're supposed to be cruel and evil and mean?
Kind of.
Yeah. All right. Can you give me an impression of a Star Wars character?
Yeah.
Okay, go.
Darth Vader.
Say it again.
Darth Vader. Nice.
Awesome.
Terrifying. That was incredible. She's sassy and savage.
Yeah.
Well, that and you're right. I think 10 out of 10 for cuteness.
Yeah. Well done, princess.
Like, your mom was like, isn't that part of the Empire to be evil? But they all fight in the squad, so I think you could be right. They might kick her out.
Yeah.
So Anwen married a guy who did his thesis on Star Wars? That's pretty awesome, man.
On the art of Star Wars, yeah.
She's
cool. She was an extra in The Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. Mm. She's from New Zealand, you know, they filmed it there.
Yeah.
She's going to podcast on that for us when the Lord of the Rings show comes out later.
Right on.
Thanks so much for calling in, you guys. That was super cute. I am definitely going to tell Anwen to just listen to that part of this podcast.
And more calls.
More calls, yeah. That'd be great for the next two. We'll like to hear you guys' voices. All right, that is our show. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. We love you guys. you want to write in or call in, leave us a message, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, be sure to check out our other shows.
Have you guys been watching Stranger Things at all? It's been a good season.
Yeah, it's been good. I binged all, I'm all the way through, so it was enjoyable. But there's two more to come, right?
Yes, in July. And Rima's covering that on Strange Indeed, and their coverage has been great. They just wrapped up Ozark. I don't have like 10 things going on right now. This is basically it. We're waiting for Better Call Saul to come back. Next episode of this podcast, Obi-Wan Kenobi Part 5 with Richard, Eric, and Jonathan, and not me. So I just get to be a fan next time. All right. That is our show.
Thanks for listening. You think you'll have this out by Saturday?
I'll have it out by Friday.
It seems I have underestimated you.
Whoop, 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 whoop.